With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right, this is the bit where I say this is the bit where we test the levels. And I'll tell you what I've been enjoying greatly, Ruth, lately, and that is James Acaster's Netflix special. Have you seen those?
I've seen some of it, yeah. I've not watched it all, but they are very funny.
Oh, brilliant. He says that he's got very strong opinions about things, and he said, my opinion is that the greatest film ever is The Theory of Everything, the film all about
Stephen Hawking.
He said the only mistake they made was they should have called it Look Who's Hawking, because they completely kicked that franchise into touch. And he said, anyway, so he thought it was a brilliant film, but somebody came out and didn't enjoy it at all and said, well, that's 3 hours of my life I'm not going to get back again. And people do say that. It's inaccurate, because you're not going to get any hours of your life back again. It's non-refundable.
I don't know if this is funny.
No,
it's more,
it's
just
true.
A bit sad.
Well, it is sad. You'll never get those out. This hour of your life, you'll never get back again.
Yes, tell me that again.
You'll never get back again. So I'm not sure exactly how we do this, because it's... Should we start?
It's been so long.
It's been so long. I think we start by doing this. And then we talk about what's been going on in your life, because there's nothing much going on in my life. It's just the same.
It's just, you know, when you've been doing it for that long.
Precisely. But in your life, you've been away very excitingly all over Eastern Europe.
Yeah, I went on my first...
Tell us about it.
Holiday with my mates.
Mm-hmm. So it was the first holiday without your mummy and daddy?
Well, I've been on school trips, things,
yeah.
But first, like, holiday.
Independent
holiday with my friends, and we went inter-railing.
Mm-hmm. When you say inter-railing, you must
Well, no,
buses,
we were on buses, but yeah. You don't call it inter-busing.
No.
But we were mostly on buses because they're cheaper, and also we went to, like, Croatia and stuff, and they don't really have trains down there. Went to lots of different places.
Tell us what places you went to.
Went to Prague, Bratislava, Budapest, Zagreb, Zadar, Ljubljana, and Venice.
Right, so they're all sort of hen night and stag night type venues.
Ljubljana isn't really.
No, but Prague and Budapest.
Prague and Budapest were the most. Bratislava kind of is. I think Bratislava probably is becoming, you know, people call it the new Prague.
And for your holidays, did you buy lots of clothes that
Not
you just
tons.
Wear the once?
No, because I read somewhere that mm-hmm. you should never buy clothes that you would only wear on holiday, because they won't be your style. And also, I didn't have... I only took a little bag, so I didn't have very much room.
No, I was impressed. You travelled light.
Mm. We only had hand luggage.
Yeah. This thing you always say about fast fashion...
I've been doing excellent. I'd not bought any fast fashion for ages. And then just before I went on holiday, I had to buy, like, a 6 pair of socks from Primark, and... because I left it too late. That's
right.
The problem with when it's not fast fashion, it's not high street fashion, is that you either have to order stuff on online sustainable brands or buy secondhand stuff, which is just, it just does take more time. It's worth it, but that's why it's not fast.
It's becoming more fashionable not to be a slave to fashion. It's becoming more fashionable not to be a slave to fashion.
I hope you'll leave the bit in when you were stumbling over your words, because you'd leave it in if it was me.
No, I wouldn't. You say that. I leave bits of it in if it's funny. But I don't leave... If you're just stumbling and sound, you know, stupid, I don't leave it.
Never happens, obviously.
Very rarely happens, but I only leave it in if it's funny.
So it's becoming more fashionable not to be a slave to fashion. Why is that, Dad?
I'll tell you exactly why it is. There's somebody who's... I've not got the cutting, but somebody who's...
just do it off the, cuff.
I'll do it off the top of my head. There's someone who's opened up a business hiring clothes so that one dress gets worn 10 times instead of being... These clothes
The rule's like 40 wears or something that they say that cancels out the...
That cancels out the damage it makes to the environment.
Faulty? I don't remember.
Mm. But whatever it is, she's sort of approaching that. It's basically, it started with ball gowns that people wore at Lady Margaret Hall in Oxford, you know, the Oxford College, Women's College. People would wear these ball gowns just for one do. So now she actually, you rent your clothes.
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, you wouldn't want to do it with everything, but with... Occasion wear.
I think
it's
like
a good idea.
Just once.
I wouldn't wear. Yeah. But then it's the same with. I always think about that they should have some kind of app for night out clothes for girls. So something, it would have to be like a local app. So it would have to be all girls in Leeds or whatever, that you could share your night out clothes with each other.
That'd
because
be a brilliant idea.
Obviously you don't. I would wear certain bits more than once. But if you've got a dress that's. And also, I think it's a thing with social media is that people are reluctant to post wearing the same clothes in two different Instagrams.
That's social media.
So if there's a dress that's on your Instagram, you probably won't wear it again on a night out because you know that that's when people are going to be taking lots of pictures. So it would be good if you could... I mean, Depop have kind of done it a bit where you sell your clothes, but I think it would work more like just lending them out and maybe you could have it back afterwards. I don't know how it would work, but...
Yeah, well, there's lots of initiatives in that sort of area at the moment. The other thing I wanted to talk about was...
Oh, on my trip, I got a tattoo.
Yes, you did get a tattoo.
That's the most staggy thing.
That's the most staggy henny thing that you did.
But I didn't get it drunk. And you made, I got it in the daytime.
You didn't get it drunk, but you made me and your mum swear not to get mad when I tell you something. All right, we won't get mad when you tell us something. You're not pregnant, are you?
Oh, my God, Dad, that's awful. Don't ever say that again.
And it turns out you got a tattoo.
But it's not that bad. You didn't mind it, did you?
No, I didn't mind it at all. Although your mother was slightly outraged at the costs because it's only a little tattoo and it was £65. I was sort of outraged, although, as I said to you at the time, if you'd asked me what a tattoo costs...
That's not expensive.
If you asked me what a tattoo costs, I would have absolutely no
exactly.
idea. I say anywhere between £7.50 and £1,000. I have no idea.
It's on your body forever. You don't want it to be cheap.
No, and you don't want it to be...
I think they do them for about £20 if you're in somewhere like Malia or Ayanapa or something.
But we must
But people get blood poisoning, so...
We went to the movies last night.
Yeah.
We went to see Spider-Man Comes Home or whatever.
Far From Home.
Far.
I'm sick of telling you this. The first one was called Homecoming. This one's called Far From Home. It's not that difficult.
But it's not the first one. There were loads before that.
But it's the first... Dad, how many times do I have to explain? It's the first one of this franchise.
Right. I don't see why it's a
because
different franchise.
Because that's how Spider-Man works. So there's Spider-Man 1, 2 and 3.
Yeah.
With Tobey Maguire. Then there's The Amazing Spider-Man 1 with Andrew Garfield. Amazing Spider-Man 2 with Andrew Garfield. Then Spider-Man Homecoming, that's the first Tom Holland one. Spider-Man Far From Home, the second one.
See, I don't see why you need three.
Because they're not related.
Why are they not related? I don't quite understand it. In the comic, there was only one Spider-Man. Is that right? You know, if you go back to the 50s or 40s or whenever the comic started, that would be just the one Spider-Man, wouldn't it?
No, so that was a series of Spider-Man stories, however. There's just one Spider-Man, but these Spider-Mans don't know about each other. No, they're Spider-Mans.
The Spider-Mans, okay.
They don't know about each other, like it's not the same world.
Right.
Like there's not more than one Spider-Man.
No.
There's in each of the franchises within the big franchise, they think, well, they are the only Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's not like Andrew Garfield is Tom Holland's cousin and they're both Spider-Man.
No, well, I can understand they don't refer to any of the previous films.
And they're not related and they're different films, different stories, different arcs, different villains.
Yeah, I couldn't quite work out the villain in this Spider-Man.
Yeah, maybe it's because you slept through loads of it.
Don't tell people I slept through Spider-Man.
But you did.
It was very noisy, I have to say, but I still managed to sleep, which I think is a tribute to me, because it said, it said at the start, in super Dolby high something sound, and I thought, right, give us what you've got, and we'll see if I can sleep through it. I did manage.
But it's stupid that you're saying you don't know who the villain is, because it was had a really clear villain.
Yeah, so can I say, or is that a spoiler if I say who it was?
I think that's a spoiler. I don't think you can say.
Right, but you sort of knew that this person that we can't say was going to be the baddie. It's a bit like...
Yeah, but... your dad came out of the cinema. He does my head in so much. He came out and he said, oh, it was all nonsense though, wasn't it? Well, yeah, there's not an actual Spider-Man at all. But it was a really good film. I would highly recommend going to see it.
Well,
it's my favourite... I think, maybe apart from Spider-Man 2, it's my favourite... He is my favourite Spider-Man. Like, this franchise of films is my favourite
Spider-Man. This is my friend, Tom Holland.
He's not your friend, Dad.
Well, his dad is my friend.
You don't have friends by proxy.
Well, when Dominic Holland, the father, I always boast to my friends that my daughter's done really well. They've all done
Which
really
one?
Well.
Martha?
But Martha I boast about. I don't mention it, but people mention to me, your daughter's doing really well. I saw her on Sky TV. You know, people say I saw her on Sky TV. But I can't do that with Dominic Holland. I can't go up to him and say, my daughter's been on Sky TV. He'll say, well, my son's been in several multi-million franchise movies. It's
he's very good in them. I think he's the most Spider-Man of all the Spider-Mans. Like, when I imagine Spider-Man.
Most spidery.
No, when I imagine Spider-Man in my head, he's the best. I think Andrew Garfield was too, like, suave to be Spider-Man.
The thing about Spider-Man is, which I was able to, even though I'd slept through quite a bit of the film, I did manage to explain to you how these superhero films work.
And it's so annoying.
That despite his superpowers and despite all the things that he can do, there's a sadness there that he's not the same as all the other kids at school.
The point of superhero films, and especially the point of Spider-Man, because it's Peter Parker, he's this nerdy kid or whatever, is that beneath all of the superheroes Spider-y and the explosions
stuff.
And the fighting villains and saving the world,
he's just an ordinary kid.
Yeah, but that's like a massive part of what Spider-Man is about.
Yeah. And Superman.
Yeah, more so Spider-Man though.
Do you think so? Because Superman,
way more Spider-Man.
Because
Superman
on the paper.
Is. Yeah, but Superman is from another planet and whatever.
Yeah. Yes, I suppose he is.
But Spider-Man is just this ordinary kid.
Yeah.
And he's also much younger, and that is the whole crux of Spider-Man. Yeah. But that just because that is kind of a simple theme doesn't make it.
Mm. No, I'm not saying it doesn't make it bad.
It's
a universal theme. But the thing to remember is this is a superhero movie for the Trump era.
I don't think the character of the villain. I get where you're coming from, but I don't think he was especially Trump.
Well, he said Trumpian things. He said people will believe anything, which is
fake
news.
I think that's fake news. I don't
think
he was a Trump symbol.
No, I'm not saying it wasn't as simple as that. He was a Trump symbol. But what it was, it's the first big superhero movie of the Trump era.
No, it's not.
Also, the heroine, I suppose you'd say, Peter Parker's the girl that, because in a way it's just a teen love story.
MJ.
Yeah, MJ. She's very much a sort of heroine for the new
woman
for the Me Too era and all that, and sarcastic, a bit like yourself. So in that respect, it's sort of up to the minute, isn't it?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, she's just the same as all, you know, you could go back to the 1950s and she'd be a Doris Day character.
Well, no.
What I'm saying is Hollywood,
not entirely.
Hollywood likes to have it both ways.
What do you mean?
Hollywood likes to pretend it's all modern and, you know, she's a strong woman and all that. But at the end of the day, she just falls into Peter Parker's arms.
Well, no, she doesn't, not at all.
Yeah,
that's not the character. And also the character is... They've made the character into a real person and stuff. Whereas in the original Spider-Mans, the Mary Jane character is just a facet of Peter Parker's person. Whereas in this, she's more of
that's what they're saying.
She is more of a well-rounded character.
They're fooling you.
Well, they're not fooling me. She is more of a well-rounded character.
No, they're fooling you and pretending she's a well-rounded character, but at the end of the day...
But she is a well-rounded character.
No, she's not. It's all veneer.
Oh, right, okay. I disagree.
Yeah, well, it's fair enough. We can disagree about this. But you enjoyed it. You thought it was great.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good film.
This will be a slightly longer podcast than usual, I think, because, again, it's got to last us for a fortnight, because you're going on holiday again! outrageous.
But no, I'm going with mum.
And so it means this is going to have to last people. And when you come back, you'll be preparing to go to uni in about mid-September?
Yes.
See, as a father, obviously I read all these stories about universities and the atmosphere on campus. And I don't know whether you read these as well.
I do not.
It sort of chills me slightly.
Chills him?
Yeah. There's one here that says there's a lad culture, in quotes, a lad culture of sex and violence, which is not being tackled on campuses around the UK.
Gosh, you would think that that kind of
precisely
stopped a bit. I didn't think unis were like that anymore.
Well, let me... it says around the UK, the university's watchdog has warned. There's an office called the Office for Students, and somebody called Nicola Dandridge, who runs these things, describes sexual misconduct as, quotes, a very serious issue facing universities, and says they must step up their efforts to stamp it out. Hundreds of women have joined Me Too style support groups in universities. We hear about all that, with some campus venues nicknamed, quote, rape clubs. Some venues on campuses. It says one in six students.
Do they mention any of the actual unis?
Yes, they do, only in a sense that they mention Oxford. Apparently, there's a problem at Oxford. But also, somebody's given her own story, and this is from Leicester University.
Right.
They don't say which ones are particularly bad, but Newcastle, there was one student here who was sexually assaulted at Newcastle. And, you know, they're terrible stories, these. There's another one here. This is somebody's own personal story.
Yeah.
She says, I was in my first term at Leicester University, where I was studying medical genetics, when I was sexually assaulted. It was just before Christmas, and we were celebrating with a night out run by the Students' Union at a club in the city. I was invited to share an Uber cab home with a male student. We were both pretty drunk, but not falling over. She was attacked. She says, I managed to get away, etc., etc. And she says, I reported what happened. They began an investigation and all that sort of thing. They banned her attacker from contacting her. But she said, I still saw him on campus. Once my parents had to drive from Birmingham at 2 a.m. after I bumped into him and panicked. Now I'm on antidepressants, etc. And they're sad stories.
Yeah, really awful.
Really awful. Another one who, again, is on antidepressants. And these sort of attacks people they know after nights out and that sort of thing.
The statistics are always that it's never really some random guy on the street who comes and attacks you. It's usually a friend and someone who you trust, which is much more psychologically damaging.
Well, it is, and it's worrying as a parent. And I read this stuff and think to myself, is it more prevalent? Because when I went to university, I know, as you often remind me, I had a very, very short university career. It wasn't...
Went to university. Losing the term loosely.
Yeah. When I spent a year at university in Glasgow, I never heard these stories, these things. And I certainly, when we went out, and I think I usually went out with the two guys that I shared the flat with in Glasgow, it wasn't something that... We didn't go out in a gang so much, and we tended not to go out with girls. We'd occasionally meet girls in pubs.
Yeah.
sound plausible? But we didn't actually... But you know what I mean? We didn't go out in a bunch like people seem to do.
There wasn't as much of a lad culture.
There was no lad culture as far as I could work out at all. We certainly didn't drink as much. Now, I'm just wondering whether things just weren't reported and that's
yeah.
why...
Yeah, well, I think that's definitely part of it.
Yeah.
And it's good that it is reported,
yes,
obviously.
It is. But...
I think it happens more.
I think it does, and I think it's more prevalent probably because of the internet culture to an extent, and obviously people growing up with porn, which we weren't.
Yeah.
You know, we never were. The only thing, we'd have magazines where there'd be pictures of naked women. That's about as far as it would go. But people are growing up with porn.
The problem is that no one's done studies into what that does to you because obviously it's so new, it's so fresh, that there's no research gone into what it does to your psyche, really.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine it's good.
It seems that boys and girls, which you would think would be a healthy thing, are friends. So they've got a bunch of boys and a bunch of girls together, are friends and know each other, but they're not boyfriends and girlfriends. But then maybe at some point...
I don't know whether it's like that kind of when boys and girls are friends sometimes... There's a sense of entitlement with a boy that he can kind of get away with whatever he wants to do.
I'm wondering if that's one of the.
But then
things.
Also, it's hard because you wouldn't want to discourage girls from being friends with boys, and you want to be able to trust your boyfriends as
it
much.
Is, and
but and then I also don't know if it's a thing of as women become more equal in the workplace and more equal in sort of everyday life, and women in politics and law and medicine and all these things, the only sort of time when boys can get some kind of one-upmanship and feel their original superior place in the world is on a night out and through brute strength. Yeah. I don't know whether that's an actual thing.
No, but it's an interesting theory.
Is there an argument that it's because men feel they have... We've talked about it before, is that women have redefined what it means to be a woman and men have never really done that, and women have turned this girl power thing and men have sort of fallen behind, I would say. And so it's the only place in which they can demonstrate their superiority is through things like that.
But a sort of alternative interpretation of that theory is that the way society has gone, everything that you said about strong women and all that sort of stuff, is denying biology. Biology hasn't quite caught up with what's in the newspapers and what women are demanding and what, etc., etc. Biology hasn't caught up with it. So, as you say, men maybe will resort to this. I mean, we may be
over-interpreting. But then that's completely...
I'm not saying it's right and it's, you know, that women should maybe take a step back. But what I am saying is that maybe something needs to be looked at. And I'm just wondering if, more importantly to me, is you're aware of that this happens in universities.
But there's only like so many necessary steps that you can take, you know, don't get ridiculously drunk so you don't know who you are.
I think that's the key thing.
I think that's one of the things. But then it's also like, if boys are allowed to get that drunk, then why are girls not? Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying that it's a good thing that boys get that drunk. I don't think anyone should ever get that drunk. And I don't think, you know, there's also a massive problem with drugs and stuff, which is a different thing. Yeah. But it's sort of unfair to say that girls have to be more responsible than boys because of boys' actions, not because of their own actions.
It's unfair.
And then it's also the thing of, she said... But also, rape and sexual assault doesn't only happen when people are drunk, and it doesn't only...
No, but one thing you can do is not get horribly drunk.
Yeah,
so
but then also
can you
she said
now before a national
she said she that, wasn't that she wasn't
they
ridiculously
falling
drunk.
Over
they weren't falling over drunk, but also
they were pretty drunk.
Yeah, but then she was being responsible in getting a taxi home with a boy who was her friend. That I think that's what the problem is that
she's not done anything wrong.
No, right? she's not done anything wrong, not at all. But like. You would say that when I'm thinking, right, how would I be safe? Oh, I'll get in I'll get a taxi home with a friend, with a male friend. Surely that's the most safe. Do you know what I mean? And if you can't
probably
be safe...
get a taxi home with a female friend.
Yeah, but if
the
you can't
safe.
Be safe in that situation, then when can you?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Maybe.
Now, you managed to go away, Ruth, and miss at least a fortnight of Love Island.
I'm up to date.
Were you watching it?
We did watch some of it while we were away.
Because you're away with three girlfriends, so all of you watching Love Island.
Yes.
Yeah. Apparently, Love Island has sparked a surge in the number of young couples seeking counselling as they see similarities between the ITV reality programme and issues in their own relationships.
Well.
Who would have thought it? Councillors are noticing language from the show increasingly being used in their sessions, including the phrase, "My head's been turned." Apparently, "my head's been turned" is a well-known expression from Love Island, which refers to a person being romantically interested in someone outside of their relationship. Gaslighting, which we've used quite a bit.
I like gaslighting as a phrase.
Well, I remember the film, the original Gaslight film with Charles Boyer. Gaslighting, whereby a man tries to convince their partner they are deluded in order to manipulate them, is another common issue. This woman here, who sees about 50 couples a month at her practice in central London, said most of my clients in their 20s or 30s have mentioned it. So people are finding... Who would have thought, though, that Love Island had a veneer of realism in it? You wouldn't have thought
no,
so.
No, of course it does. Who would have thought it doesn't?
Me? Because I just thought it was...
nonsense
silly. Entertainment. Here I am. I thought Spider-Man was nonsense. I thought Love Island was nonsense, but... Apparently I'm wrong.
Please stand corrected.
Now, would you think Love Island would be a huge success in the United States? It's a British format, so
once again,
Britain leads the world in television nonsense. But who would have thought this British format, how would you think it would do in America?
With American people, or just the British show being shown?
The British show is shown there on one of these channels, there's an obscure satellite channel that shows British stuff and is...
they done a version of it? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, what I'm saying is the British show has been a big cult success on the sort of small-scale satellite channel.
See, I think that the British show would do well. I think our show, Americans watching it, I think they would enjoy that. I don't think it would work with American people.
And it doesn't, you're quite right.
Yeah.
Do you know why?
No.
Because they can't do the banter.
They can't do the banter. Yeah, because America's Next Top Model doesn't really work with British people because we're too nice to each other. Because on America's Next Top Model, the girls will fight with each other and they'll criticise each other and they'll be, like, mean. Whereas in the British one, everyone's just nice to each other. They all really get along and someone wins a modelling competition. It's not as exciting. The Australian one did well, though.
Did it?
Mm.
Well, maybe they've got the bants. We've got the bants. The Aussies have
got the bants.
Yep.
Like that?
Yeah, very good, Ruth.
Thanks.
I've had a couple of emails from people saying they'd like to hear your Owen Wilson impersonation again. So I'm going to have to ask you to do it because...
I don't want we're allowing to do it.
No, but people are...
It's not even good, though. We should have done it the first time.
That might be why people want to hear it.
I know,
it
it's mean.
You've got to look after your fan base. Joan
I've forgotten what I say.
Joan Crawford, you say, I'm not going to lie to you.
I'm not going to lie to you.
That's it. Joan Crawford, the famous American film star of the 40s and 50s and in the 60s a bit as well, and into the 70s actually, she made a couple of horror films in the 70s. But Joan Crawford, who had a very, very long career, she used to reply to every single letter that she got. This was fan mail.
She used to reply. Yeah. Oh, she had like a team.
No, that's the whole point. She spent all that. She neglected her own daughter and, in fact, physically abused
her own
daughter.
That's like Enid Blyton.
Very like Enid Blyton. That's what I'm saying. If you want to get to that Enid Blyton and Joan Crawford level, you have to start looking after your fan base. That's what I'm saying. We ought to say that by the time this podcast goes out to the audience, your fan base, we will have a new Prime Minister in the United Kingdom.
What is going on? I've kind of lost touch.
Well, Boris Johnson is well ahead in the race between him and...
But I thought when they were flying that big inflatable Boris and stuff that maybe...
I think the people
get
who
better.
People who are voting in this competition.
I don't want either of them, but I would much prefer Jeremy Hunt.
Yeah. Well, by the time this goes out, I think Boris Johnson will be our Prime Minister.
What has the world come to? How have we allowed this to happen?
Well, as I said on my talk radio show, it was a story I was reading out of the papers, and it said by the end of this week, Boris Johnson will be our Prime Minister. And I said, I'll just run that sentence by you one more time. By the end of this week, Boris Johnson will be our new Prime Minister. I said, is that the most frightening sentence in the English language?
I think Donald Trump is the President of America.
Yeah, maybe.
Close.
Turned out not to be anyway, because there was another story further down that said, otherwise, Jeremy Corbyn will be our new Prime Minister. And I said, there you go.
I don't know. It's a toss-up between which is the lesser of the evils.
I think the lesser of the evils is
Boris Johnson,
to be honest.
Pretty dicky.
Pretty dicky.
Yeah.
High time we had some music. We'll start with mine this week.
Okay.
I've played mine primarily to annoy Howard Raucus. He got in touch to complain about my music choices, saying that I was addicted to the sort of mimsy mid-70s... Middle-of-the-road country rock. And here we have a prime example. It's such a good tune. It's a guy called Andrew Gold. I'm suspecting, Ruth, you may have heard that before.
I feel like I have heard it, but not loads. I didn't know it, but
it's good, isn't it?
It's okay. It kind of reminds me a bit of like Will Young or something.
Oh dear, you shouldn't say that. He's Andrew Gold, who did that. He's no longer with us, sadly. Born 1951, died 2011. I think he had cancer, I'm not sure. But he was an American singer, songwriter, musician and arranger. That was a top five hit in the UK. He also collaborated with Graham Gouldman of 10cc, who we've played once or twice. He was a multi-instrumentalist. He played guitar, bass, keyboards, accordion, synthesizer, harmonica, saxophone, flute, drums and percussion, and also played more arcane musical instruments such as ukulele, musette. Do you know what a musette is? I have no idea. And harmonium. Also a producer, sound engineer, film composer, session musician, actor and painter.
Wow, great.
Can I hear a bit of buzzing in the background? Is it coming from outside?
I think it's the sounds of suburbia.
It's the sounds of suburbia, that's all right.
No, I think it's building work.
Building, that's all right, as long as it's the sounds of suburbia and not the sound...
Suburbia.
As long as it's the sounds of suburbia and not the sound of my computer.
I hope we're going to leave that in.
I have to explain that. I just spilt some water. Thankfully, it was only water and not coffee or anything, but I spilled a bit of water over my computer.
Mm.
And it does worry you.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? But we think that's coming from outside rather than being a buzz from my computer.
I'm pretty sure that's coming out from
Thank
outside.
Thank goodness for that.
Should we have my track now?
Let's have yours.
So mine is a song called Belong to You.
Well, I have to say, Ruth, when I was downloading that, I went through the song to try and find that I was expecting something to happen.
No, it's just quite mellow, really.
It's just totally mellow. Nothing, you know, I thought, well, I'll try and find the bit where the rap comes in or whatever. And there didn't seem to be any of that.
It's just very chill.
So summer sound?
Yeah, a bit, I guess. I was just saying...
What's she called?
She's called Sabrina Claudia.
And he's called Six Lack.
I think maybe it's just black. You know.
But it's a number
it
six.
It is a number six and then lack. Yeah. So she's an American singer and songwriter, and this is her like biggest song, which peaked at number two on the like Billboard charts or whatever.
Nobody cares about the charts anymore, do they?
Nope, not at all. So, it is pronounced black. So the guy, and then it's featuring this guy called Black, and he is from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, I've been there.
Obviously,
it's the home of
music.
It's the home of Gladys Knight.
So as you can see, Atlanta still producing artists.
Well, Gladys Knight is, at least was, not anymore, I think the business closed down, but was producing not just hit records, but also fried chicken. Gladys Knight's Chicken Shack.
It's closed down though, hasn't it?
It's closed down, sadly. Gladys Knight is in Leeds. She's not now, but she's coming to Leeds.
She is.
To the,
does she still sound good and
apparently
stuff?
Apparently she's good.
Because you know, like some... Yes. Really awful, but then like Tom Jones still sounds great.
Yeah.
So, is she a Tom Jones or a Paul McCartney?
I think she's a. Although Paul had a bad.
Paul's not
bad,
as
no,
bad.
No, he's not as bad. He had a bad time at the Olympics, but other than that, it's been
Madonna.
Been fine. Madonna. But again, you see, at that time at the Eurovision.
Eurovision.
But...
No, her album sounds fine, but sounds that good. That performance at the Eurovision Song Contest was a crime against humanity.
Yeah, you're probably right. Can I tell you something about Andrew Gold?
Oh my God, we're back on Andrew Gold.
Well, I just want to tell you about his parents. He was destined, he's from California, Burbank, California, very much in the centre of Hollywood, in a very privileged upbringing because his dad was Ernest Gold, who wrote lots of fine film scores, including the Oscar-winning score for the movie Exodus. So he was a...
Never seen it.
Well, he was... No, you wouldn't have done it as a 50s film, but he was but a big, big, big film in the 50s.
Mm.
So he grew up with an Oscar on the mantelpiece.
Wow.
That's got to put pressure on you, though, as a kid.
Yeah.
And his mum was Marnie Nixon, who was a singer.
I've heard of her.
You will have done, because she provided the singing voice for lots of actresses, including Natalie Wood in
yes,
West Side
that's
Story.
It. That's yeah. why I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, so she's...
It's awful that they used to put someone else's voice on someone, someone's body.
There's a whole film about that called Singing in the Rain.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Marnie Nixon did the voice of Natalie Wood in West Side Story. She also did the voice of Deborah Kerr in The King and I. So she did all those great
Never seen
songs.
The King and I.
Oh, that's a great musical. It's really good. And also did the voice of Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady.
Oh.
So she did all that. I mean,
yeah.
Basically, virtually every fine
God, yeah.
female singer.
Poor her, not having a face in it, though.
Didn't, yeah. Marnie Nixon, people don't know. But then, of course, Andrew Gold, her son, did awfully well.
Have we got any emails?
We have, but I've not printed them out, sadly.
So you'll have to keep you hoping on the emails.
Yeah, do say if you want, but we'd love to get them, wouldn't we?
We'd love to get them. We still read them. It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. That's martinandruthpodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. See, wasn't that just how you like me to do it?
It's exactly as I like you to do it.
And if you are looking for something to do while we're not posting the podcast, you can go over to the Spotify playlist and type in either Martin and Ruth or Ruthie, Me and My Dad, and you'll find this week's songs in full and all the others from all the other weeks. So you can skip out the ones that Dad's played and then just listen to my ones.
Ruthie, you're,
if you're
being,
not a fan of country.
No, you're being such a Joan Crawford, looking after your fan base, telling them all what to do and everything.
I'm taking your advice on board.
I'll tell you who's a bit of a fan of our podcast, and that's my colleague on Talk Radio, Christo, who always listens to the bit that we play on Talk as he comes in. And he likes to listen to your take on trans issues. And there's a story here. It says, medical staff from England's only children's gender clinic have gone public for the first time to raise fears about the treatment of youngsters seeking a sex change. Kirsty Entwistle, who was a psychologist, so she's left the employee now, but she was a psychologist at the Gender Identity Development Service, you know, GIDS or JIDS they call it, in Leeds until October last year, accused some of its clinicians of misleading patients. She warned they are, quotes, making decisions that will have a major impact on children and young people's bodies and lives without a robust evidence base. And she's issued an open letter about this. She says, children who have had very traumatic early experiences were being, quotes, put on the medical pathway to transition, quotes, without having explored or addressed their early adverse experiences. She said the service minimised or dismissed the fact that many of the children it saw were victims of parental abandonment, sexual abuse, domestic violence or extreme poverty. She said staff sometimes told children and their families that hormone blockers given to many GIDS patients to stop the progress of puberty are fully reversible. In reality, she said, no one knows what the impacts are on children's brains, so how's it possible to make this assessment? The general feeling is that maybe, this is the way I feel about it, maybe too many young people are being sort of given that as a first option if you,
yeah.
you know, have got all sorts of other problems. And
I mean, you say a first option, but also it does take about 3 years to get an appointment. So if you book an appointment by the time...
I think so.
Yeah. I don't think it's easy to get an appointment if you're a kid, and I don't think it's easy to get on one of these programmes if you're a kid either. They're, you know,
so you're thinking that by the time they jump through those hoops,
yeah.
it will be a fairly positive decision.
Maybe,
for them.
Yeah. But then also I think it's just one of those things that's just like a tightrope to walk. No one knows where to draw a line on it.
But do you think
or whether there should be or what
some of the people
happens.
Who are emotionally in favour of, you know, and see all the benefits of transitioning for people, and see the harm it does or has done over the years for people not transitioning, etc., are maybe taking their passion and their emotional support for this sort of thing to a higher... It's leading them to disregard stuff that ought to be taken into account. Do you not think that is a possibility?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. I think that could happen, but whether it does, I think is impossible to know.
Yeah, it's also difficult.
But it's also one of those things where there's not been that much research into it. It's not been happening for that
more
long.
Research,
do I think more research needs to go into transgender issues?
Yeah.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
Before, but do you think we've jumped the gun and done all...
But then you can't...
And
like,
done all the reassigning before the research
has
been done.
But then reassignment. Gender reassignment has been happening for a really, really long time. If you've seen the film, what's it called? The one with Eddie Redmayne? The Danish girl.
Danish girl, yeah.
That's like the Victorian era. Not Victorian. It's like the early 1900s or something.
Edwardian. Okay. But, I mean, the question I'm asking is, do you think more research needs to be done before and fewer transitions until we know more about it?
But then... I don't know, because I feel like we would have to do... I would have to talk to kids and their parents. Like, I just don't think you can say. I don't think you're in a position to.
Now, before you went away, Ruth, you'd have seen the tennis from Wimbledon and the success of Coco Gauff, or Corrie Gauff, but I think she likes...
Yeah, I didn't realise that was her nickname.
Yes, she likes to be called Coco. Hmm. This was the 15-year-old who beat Venus Williams. And a piece here by a columnist called Lorraine Candy. She's got a 15-year-old daughter who wasn't at Wimbledon. And she said all
this... Yeah, it's very upsetting to be a 15-year-old daughter at the moment.
Yeah. And, well, you're 18.
I know, what have I done?
We were watching this 15-year-old at Wimbledon there. And I thought, there, look. Ruth,
see, look what she's doing.
Look what she's doing at 15.
I'm getting
18.
Past the age where you can be both young and successful. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's an obsession with, like, the wonder kid.
Mm.
What's the word? Funder?
Wunderkind.
Wunderkind. That's
Wunderkind.
What they call it, isn't it?
That's what the Germans call it.
It is, I think it's actually unhealthy.
Mm. Well, she says she was watching Corrie Gauff beat Venus Williams in the first round of the Wimbledon tournament, while my own 15-year-old was faffing about in her bedroom with some hair straighteners. Obviously, we love our daughter just as she is, straightened hair or not. But you can't help but wonder, what if? Corrie.
That's an awful thing to say. Her poor daughter.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Corrie, who's the father of Coco, that's probably why. So Corrie Gauff, a former college basketball player, and Candy Gauff, a teacher and former college athlete. So it's a bit like the Andrew Gold story, isn't it? You know, his
successful parents. Children.
Yeah. Anyway, they coached Coco, whose real name is Corrie, from the age of 7, homeschooling her in Florida and taking her to France at the age of 10 to train at an academy run by Serena Williams coach. Anyway, this woman, Lorraine Candy, who's written this thing, says our son, she wonders whether she ought to have been more pushy and maybe it'd have been, you know, her daughter wouldn't have been straightening her hair. She'd have been out there playing at Wimbledon.
There's nothing wrong with straightening your hair.
No, I know, you all do it. Our son taught himself gymnastics from YouTube videos at the age of 7. Tired of Henry's twirling about the living room, I marched him off to a local club and pushed him in front of a coach. I had no idea there was a waiting list for this prestigious club, that you had to qualify, that the kids who were usually accepted were those who could turn cartwheels before they could walk. Which, in a way, is rather like the dancing thing that you went to.
Dance Moms.
Not Dance Moms. What was
I thought you were going to talk about Dance Moms.
Well, I will
that
do
is...
in a second. What was the thing that you went to? Scala.
Yeah.
But there you had to sort of audition and be good before you got in, didn't you?
Yeah, I think most people got in there. I don't know.
Well,
I definitely did do an audition because I remember being sat in the room.
Yeah, I remember doing an audition. Yeah.
And them asking me to laugh and then cry. And then laugh and then cry.
Mm.
And laugh and cry.
Which you'd have been used to anyway.
Yeah, just an emotional rollercoaster. Yeah, it comes with being manic depressive, so...
Anyway,
I'm kidding, of course.
Of course you're kidding. And the kids were usually accepted this one, but those who could turn cartwheels where they could walk. Mm. The coach loved him. This is her son, Henry. And said he was extraordinarily talented for a self-taught child. The medals rolled in. There were competitions all across the country, trips to a gym, etc., etc. The training was relentless. There were amazing highs and painful lows. And yet, while Coco Gauff was making it through to the final 16 before being knocked out, our now 12-year-old son was playing Minecraft on the computer in the kitchen, all hope of Max Whitlock-style Olympic stardom abandoned. The day he came home from practice 2 years into his chapter and said he just didn't want to do it anymore. And yeah. She says, while I'd enjoyed the wearing the cloak of showing off, as my other kids referred to it, we let it end. And I completely agree with that.
Yeah,
to do. It's more or less what you did. You said, Dad, I don't want to be a song and dance artist anymore.
I did acting a lot longer than I did anything else. But sometimes
you decided you're just going to jack in. And I know your mum was very disappointed.
I think I jacked in doing like performing arts, but it was also because I wasn't that good.
Especially with dancing.
I was terrible. Like, I was. Yeah. I had to work really hard to be very mediocre at dancing. It just wasn't for me. And like, I think as a kid, you can sense it. But all parents think their children
are. Should we have been pushier?
I don't think so. I think it's.
I think there's a line.
Yeah.
Unless you're being pushed, everybody will give up because it is it's hard work. I mean, you said, oh, you had to work hard to be me. I thought you were very good, but, you know.
I was not good.
Let's be honest and say you did perform professionally in Annie.
Did. Was not Annie, though.
No, you weren't Annie. What was the character? Molly?
It was Tessie.
Tessie. Interestingly.
Had lines.
You
had three.
Yeah, three lines. Then
no, I think I had four, maybe.
Performed alongside Tommy Steele. Tommy Steele was
that was the highest of my career.
Britain,
but now I'm all washed up.
It was washed up at the age of 18. He was Britain's first rock and roll star.
Wow.
Yeah, back in 1958, he was performing in coffee bars in London. And there he was at some advanced age. I know that you kids...
So old.
You kids who were in Scrooge were with Tommy Steele were told you weren't allowed to make a noise in the afternoon because that was when Tommy had his nap.
Yeah, you weren't really allowed to say... You were encouraged not to say hello to Tommy Steele.
And you didn't have...
He was not rude, though. Like, I don't think so. I think I remember him just like smiling at us and whatever. Mm. But...
Don't engage. Bit like the royal family, I suppose. Yeah. Bit like the queen.
He's tired.
And he's
tired because he's about 140.
Mm. Well, very much like the queen, who you think would be tired. And you're not allowed to, should you ever, when you go up to get
my MBE.
Your MBE.
Next year.
Don't engage. You're not going to get it for this podcast, I don't think. But don't engage the.
I'd refuse it, I think.
You'd refuse the MBE?
Yeah, I think so.
A lot of people...
On moral grounds.
A lot of people refused the MBE when the Beatles got theirs because they thought it was shocking. Just think back, 1960s, people thought... Because the MBE went to sort of war heroes
and
people thought, giving it to pop
singers... Now it goes to any old person,
yeah. Now it goes to any person, including... you look down the list of people who get honours, it's just... ridiculous.
Mm.
Goes to all sorts of people.
It's lost its sparkle.
It has lost its sparkle. I always complain about the lollipop man who gets the MBE. You often find somebody who's been a long-serving lollipop person will get an MBE or an OBE or some sort of honour. And when you think about it, the lollipop person is now on zebra crossings or, you know, traffic light controlled crossings and just leads the children.
Ours wasn't. Not at Beckett's.
What? Was in the actual middle of the road?
The road. The full-on road, yeah.
Oh, well...
But then she got fired.
Why did she get fired?
Because she took a selfie with one of the kids.
One of the
people in, like, year 11 or whatever was like, oh, can I have a selfie? And, like, just joking. Because everyone was, like, mates with her. Because, obviously, you see her 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And then she got fired because you're not allowed to do that or something. Then we had no lollipop lady. See, what is more safe, Dad?
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking that certainly the lollipop lady outside the private school near us is at a lights control crossing. And I thought, why give these people an MBE for stopping the traffic when the traffic would stop anyway because there's traffic lights.
They're friendly, the community.
Well, I suppose that's why they do it. But my view is, you know, to earn an MBE, you should stop the traffic on the fast lane of the A1.
Oh, yeah. That's just walk out into the motorway.
Precisely. And then you've earned...
Ridiculous.
Then you've earned your MBE. Did we come to the end of that bit? I can't remember what I was saying. Where
something
we were going
about
with that.
Parents and pushing your kids.
Oh, right. Well, we'd more or less covered that and said my view is let them give up. Why should let them learn about failure at a very early stage and it'll prepare them for the rest of life.
Yeah, but I do think it's good to send your kids. I mean, obviously, sometimes it will come down to like a money thing as well, which is rubbish, is that like you paid for me to do dancing lessons, which I really appreciate because now you know it helps also that it's about some even if you're a crappy dancer like it's about making friends and sort of being more comfortable in you know you have to go into a changing room and you all have to just get changed and it's being on your own and being independent and all that kind of stuff and that I like
so it's all character forming
it's character forming and sometimes you're not going to a ballet lesson to be a prima ballerina. I mean, some people are, I'm sure, and some people do, and they make it into their career, but
ballet,
most people
ballet
do different.
Because you went to ballet lessons as well.
I went to ballet lessons for quite a long time.
So all these lessons...
Terrible.
That we paid for in those sort of performing arts type things. Don't forget...
Look at me now.
I gave up smoking to pay for those things. I've sacrificed 20 years of smoking so that you could give up being a ballet dancer. I could have been enjoying a cigarette right now. Say what, before you find your meme, just do as one of your good impersonations.
I don't have any good ones.
Well, do as one of your bad ones then, just for your fan base.
I really don't want to.
I know you
don't. I don't know who to do.
Well, do Owen Wilson. You do a good Owen Wilson.
No. You see, I'm from now.
That's Owen Wilson.
Yeah, go back in time.
In time. That's Midnight in Paris.
Yeah. I stole that from Tom Hiddleston, who does it. Yeah. Incredibly well.
So it's your impersonation of Tom Hiddleston.
I'm doing Tom Hiddleston doing Owen Wilson. Very meta.
Yeah.
Right. In brackets, Plato returns from the dead. Plato. So who's that girl? Are you together? Me. No. It's purely platonic. Plato. What does platonic mean? Me. It means we don't have sex. Plato. What the heck?
Very good. And I've heard that about platonic relationships lots of times where people say, oh, yeah, Plato, famous for inventing the platonic relationship. Oh, yeah, well done, Plato. Thanks for that. And the other one, Oedipus, who amazingly had an Oedipus complex. What are the chances? And Achilles.
Mm.
He had an Achilles heel.
Yeah, well, no, the Achilles heel thing is different.
Why?
Because that's a myth, whereas Plato and Oedipus were.
Yes.
Oedipus is...
As the old Jewish joke goes.
Well, no, the Achilles heel, though, that's a myth because Achilles was dipped in a river by his heel.
Mm.
So then he was shot in the heel. So that's different.
Do you know, Greek myths are such nonsense. Greek myths, are, you know...
Heard it here first, yeah, ladies and gents.
It's absolutely... We went, myself and your mother, we went to Athens and we went up to the Acropolis.
This is the thing, there's not been a podcast just because I've been away, it's also been you.
Yeah, so we went up to the Acropolis and we went on an organised tour. So it was Athens walking tour.
Yeah.
So we meet up at this cafe and this guide who knows all about Greek mythology takes us up there. And the more, you know, oh, so the baby was born out of somebody's head. All nonsense and Zeus.
Yeah, it's always the ones where, I can't remember who it is, but he like ate all five of his children
and then they
grew up inside him and then one of them like cut himself out of the body and his mum then killed the father. It's just ridiculous.
They told us all these stories and I'm afraid my attitude was very much like my attitude to Spider-Man Far From Home. I said to the guide, I said, surely this is all just nonsense. People still talking
about that.
You're
ridiculous.
So we had all this nonsense. But to repeat the Jewish joke about Oedipus, the joke is, Oedipus Schmoedipus, as long as he loves his mother.
Because Jews love their mum.
Well, it's not just that. It's just because Jews like to say,
I thought that was because there's the the thing around Jewish mothers of always feeding the matzah ball soup and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I thought that was the joke.
Matzah ball. That is sort of the joke.
Yeah.
Good. Well, we've not only done the joke, we've explained the joke. We've covered Greek mythology.
And, you know, made some sweeping generalisations about Jews, which is always fun.
Mm. If you want to get in touch with us to complain about that or anything else, or just tell us how much you
enjoy... By the way, Dad is Jewish. That's why...
I'm allowed.
Well, yeah, I don't want people to think we're just massive anti-Semites.
No, not. Otherwise, we'd have a...
we wouldn't make, you know, jokes about Jews.
We'd be just sign up to the Labour Party.
Ha
ha. But I have to tell you about when I did a Jewish joke in The Guardian, when I used to do a column in The Guardian, and it wasn't explained that I was Jewish. You know, you wouldn't explain it. So I did a Jewish joke, and somebody wrote in
and
complained. I have told this story, I'm sure. But somebody wrote in and complained and said, "How, you know, The Guardian, you expect it to be politically correct and always, and there you are with Jewish jokes." And somebody put underneath and said, "I think you ought to know that Martin Keller is Jewish." And somebody put under that, "Oh, a Jewish writer in The Guardian, who'd have thought?"
But also, you look... I mean, no offence, but you look unbelievably Jewish.
Why should I take offence at that? That's like saying, you know, oh, you are gay and you seem gay, but no offence.
Well, no.
We've stopped doing that about 20 years ago, Ruth.
It's no offence because, you know, I don't want you to think I'm stereotyping what Jewish people look like, but you do.
Yeah. But yes, but it's something that these days you would embrace. You know, no, years ago, Jewish people used to have nose jobs so that they looked less Jewish and therefore could join a
group. But then Barbara Streisand just...
She didn't bother.
She got told to, though, didn't she? That's the story, is that she always got told to, you'll never make it, you've got to have a nose job, you won't be in any films if you don't have a nose job. And then she didn't have one, and that's what kind of she became known for was...
Not having a nose job.
What she looked
I don't think Barbara Streisand became known for not having a nose job.
No, she didn't become...
I think she was known for one of the finest entertainers the country...
She had an iconic face and a really recognisable look because she didn't look like every other, you know, white female singer.
Hmm. Are you saying I've got an
Jewish.
Iconic face then?
No.
Do you know the joke about Barbara Streisand is, you know how women... go into...
This is going to be an horrible joke.
Go into hair salons and take a picture of, usually of Jennifer Aniston years ago, wasn't it?
Mm.
You'd go in with a picture of Jennifer Aniston from Friends and say, could you do this for me? Somebody went in with a picture of Barbara Streisand and said, could you do this for me? So the guy took the hairbrush and broke her nose.
It's awful.
It is awful, but that's the sort of jokes people used to tell years ago. So aren't you glad you're not growing up in the era...
Very glad.
...we used to tell jokes like that?
Very, very pleased.
Either anti-Semitic or anti-woman, all that.
Or both.
Or both.
If you were very funny.
If you hit the jackpot, you got both in there. Do get in touch with us if you want to complain about any of this bit at the end of the podcast. It's martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. martinandruthpodcast@gmail.com. And we won't see you next week.
But we will the week after.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.